I like doing things to you with my mouth.
Shall we do it now?
Her unfocused gaze moves from my mouth to my eyes. Tempting though that sounds, I'm not sure that's a good idea right now. She sways a little, and I tighten my hold on her.
Dance with me.
She mumbles, grinning up at me. She lets her hands run down my jacket lapels and tugs me closer so I feel her down the length of my body. We should put you to bed.
I want to dance with you.
She whispers and offers me her lips. Anna, I warn, tempted to carry her to bed. But I'm enjoying the feel of her in my arms and the way she's imploring me with her big blue eyes. Okay, what would you like to dance to? I'm feeling indulgent.
Music.
I laugh, a little exasperated, and move us over to the kitchen counter where I pick up the remote and press play. Moby's Body Rock starts over the sound system. It's one of my favorites from my youth, but a bit frenetic for now. I skip the track, and Nina Simone's My Baby Just Cares for Me echoes through the room. This, I state in response to Anna's inebriated smile.
Yes.
She throws her head and arms back with such enthusiasm that I almost drop her. Shit, Anna. I'm glad I have my arm around her waist, otherwise she'd be sprawled on the floor. She starts to stagger, and I wonder if she's going to pass out, then realize she's attempting to dance. Whoa. I clamp my arms around her. I've never danced with someone as inebriated as Anna. She is all arms and legs and unpredictable spins. It's an education. I try to take both her hands and lead her around the room in a semblance of a dance that's more a jig, so it's not entirely successful. It's unsettling. Suddenly she stops and clutches her head.
Oh, the room is spinning.
Oh, no. I think we should go to bed. She looks up at me between her fingers.
Why? What are you going to do?
Is she flirting or is this a serious question? Let you sleep, I reply, deadpan. She makes a face which I interpret as disappointment, but taking her hand, I guide her back to the kitchen counter. From the cupboard, I grab a glass and fill it with water. Drink this. I pass it to her, and she does as she's told. All of it. She narrows her eyes and squints, I suspect, to get me in focus.
You've done this before?
Yes, with you, last time you were inebriated. She drains the glass and wipes her mouth with the back of her hand.
Are you going to fuck me?
No, not tonight. She frowns. Come. I guide her to our bedroom suite, switch on the bedside lights from the wall, and release her by the bed. Do you feel sick?
No,
she says emphatically. That's a relief. Do you need to use the bathroom?
No.
Turn around, I demand. She gives me a lopsided smile, and I remove the tiara. Turn around, let me unzip your dress. I drag the ridiculous sash over her head.
You are so good to me.
She lays her hand on my chest, splaying out her fingers. Enough. Turn around. I won't ask you again. She grins.
There he is.
Oh, baby. I grasp her shoulders and gently turn her around so I can unfasten her dress. It obliges and falls immediately, pooling at her feet. She's wearing a black lacy bra, matching panties, and a white garter. I undo her bra and step forward, bringing her body flush to mine, and I drag the straps down her arms. She rubs her ass against me and moves her hand behind her to fondle my more than interested dick. Anna, I allow myself a brief moment of pure pleasure and push my hips forward as her hand fumbles the length of my hardening cock. Yes. I drop her bra on the floor, move her hair aside, and run my lips down her neck. Stop, I whisper. She continues to rub her hand over me. I groan and step back. Kneeling, I slip the garter, which I suspect came with the sash and tiara, and her panties down her legs and kiss her behind. Step. She does, and I remove her underwear and gather her clothes together before pulling back the duvet. Into bed. Now she turns around.
Join me,
she says with a provocative smile. She's naked and lovely and wanton and tempting. She's also completely drunk. Get into bed, I'll be back. She sways, sits down, then flops back on the bed, and I lift her feet onto the mattress and cover her up.
Are you going to punish me?
She slurs. Punish you?
For getting this drunk? A punishment, fuck. You can do anything you want to me.
She whispers and holds out her arms. Oh, God. A million erotic thoughts flit through my mind, and it takes all my willpower to lean over, gently plant a kiss on her forehead, and leave. In the closet, which is still full of shopping bags from her earlier trip, I place her clothes in the laundry basket and strip out of my suit and shirt. I drag on my PJs and a t-shirt and head into the bathroom. While brushing my teeth, I contemplate what I could do to a drunken Anna. She wants punishing. My thoughts do little to ease my erection. Pervert. I mouth at my reflection. I switch off the lights and head back into the bedroom. As I suspected, Anna is out cold, her hair spilling in all directions over the pillows. She looks lovely. I climb in beside her and roll onto my side to watch her sleep. She's going to have one hell of a hangover in the morning. Leaning over, I kiss her hair. I love you, Anastasia, I whisper, and I lay back and stare at the ceiling. I'm surprised that I'm not furious with her. No, I found her charming and funny. Maybe I'm growing up, finally. I hope so. This time next week, I'll be a married man. Tuesday, July 26th, 2011. I hang up from my call with Troy Whalen, my banker. I've set up a joint account for me and Anna that will go live once she's Mrs. Anastasia Gray. I'm not sure what she'll ever need it for, but if something happens to me... Jeez, if something happens to her... My phone buzzes, distracting me from a slew of dark thoughts.
Mr. Gray, I have your mother on the line,
Andrea says. I suppress a groan. Put her through.
Will do. Here you go, sir.
Grace?
Darling, how are you?
I'm good. What is it?
Always so brusque. I'm checking up on you, that's all. I talk to Anna more than you these days.
Well, I'm good. Still here. Still getting married. Thank you for all that you've done. Is there anything specific you want? She sighs.
No, darling, I'm looking forward to the rehearsal dinner and having Anna stay with us the night before the wedding. And of course her mother and her stepfather Bob, too. I'm glad we're meeting them before the big day. Are they on good terms with her dad?
With Ray, I think so. But I don't know. You'll need to ask Anna.
I'll do that. I'm glad he's staying with you.
It was not my idea. Anna is hoping that we'll bond. Frankly, Raymond Steele intimidates me. Grace pauses.
I'm sure you will. Do you have a marriage license?
I scoff. Of course we do. We picked it up last week.
Honeymoon?
It's all arranged.
And your suit?
I direct my eye roll at the phone. It was delivered today. It fits.
Rings?
Rings? Shit. Rings. How the hell did we forget about rings? In hand. I mutter and laugh because both Anna and I have overlooked the rings.
What's so funny?
Nothing, Mom. Anything else?
You forgot the rings?
I sigh. Busted. How did you know?
I'm your mother, and you called me Mom. You rarely do that.
The humor and warmth in her voice is soothing. Perceptive, Dr. Gray. She chuckles.
Oh, Christian, I love you so much. If you don't have rings, you'd better get some. Everything here is on track. The pavilion goes up tomorrow, and the decorators will follow.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks for everything.
See you Friday.
She hangs up, and I stare out at the Seattle skyline, grateful to all that is holy for Dr. Grace Trevelyan Gray. Mom. I call Anna.
Anastasia Steele?
She sounds distracted. We forgot the rings.
Rings? Oh, rings!
I laugh because her reaction is the same as mine, and I can imagine her eyes widening in shock. I know. How could we forget?
My mom always says the devil is in the details.
Anna agrees. She's not wrong. What sort of ring would you like?
Oh.
I thought a platinum band to match your engagement ring.
Christian, that would be... That would be more than mighty fine.
Her voice is a whisper. I smile. I'll get matching ones. She gasps.
You'll wear one too?
Why wouldn't I? I'm surprised by her question.
I don't know. I'm thrilled that you would.
Anna, I'm yours. I want the world to know.
I'm very pleased to hear that.
You should know this by now.
I do know.
She whispers.
It still gives me all the feels when you say it.
The feels? She giggles.
Yes, the feels.
Sounds painful.
No, it's the opposite of painful.
My heart soars. Sometimes she takes my breath away. I swallow, trying to contain my elation. I'd better get right on this.
You better.
Laters, baby.
Laters, Christian. I love you.
I let her words settle into my heart. She loves me.
Are you going to hang up?
She asks. No. She laughs.
I have to go. I have a meeting and my boss's boss, you know.
Yeah, he can be an asshole.
He can, but he can also be the best of men.
I'm staring at her portrait on my office wall. Her shy, teasing smile is directed at me. My body and my soul stir. This has to be one of the sweetest things she's ever said to me.
I'll see you tonight,
she says, and the line goes dead before I have a chance to respond. Anastasia Steele, you are the most disarming woman I know. I stare at her photograph, digesting her words, and I know my smile would light up a dark and soulless night. Feeling inspired, I find the number for Astoria Fine Jewelry and press call. It's not only rings I need, but a wedding present for my future wife, too. My meeting with Welch is inconclusive. There is still no lead on the perpetrator, and I'm beginning to believe the sabotage is a figment of my overactive imagination. Welch's team is drilling down into all ex-employee records of the companies that GEH has acquired to see if he can find something. But we've been over this ground, and I think he's grasping at straws. The only potential suspects we had were Hyde and Woods, but Hyde has been discounted, as he's been in Florida since he was fired, and there's no evidence that links Woods to the crash, yet.
I know how exasperating this is for you, Gray,
Welch says, his voice as gruff as ever.
We are keeping an extra watchful eye on the Gulf Stream.
I'm wondering if we overreacted to the FAA report.
No, we did not. Not where your safety is concerned. We'll just have to be patient for the NTSB report. I'm expecting it any day.
As soon as you have it. I let the sentence finish itself.
Yes, sir.
In the meantime, please liaise with Taylor. He's coming with us to oversee our security while we're on our honeymoon.
Will do. And congratulations once again.
I nod my thanks. Okay. That's it. Thanks for coming in. Welch rises, and we shake hands. Back at my desk, I check my emails. From Dr. John Flynn to Christian Gray, July 26th, 2011, 1453. Forward for Christian Gray. Christian, I received the attached from Leela Williams. We can discuss when I see you on Thursday. J.F.
From Leela Williams to Dr. John Flynn, July 26, 2011, 6:32 EST. For Christian Gray. Dearest John, thank you for your continued support. I cannot begin to tell you what it has meant for me. My parents have embraced me back into the fold. I can hardly believe how considerate they've been, given all the trouble I've caused them. My divorce from my husband should be final next month. At last, I'll be able to move on with my life. My only regret is that I haven't been able to thank Mr. Gray in person. Please pass on this note to him. I would really like to deliver my thanks personally. My life could have taken such a bad turn if not for his and your intervention. Many thanks, Leela.
No fucking way. Leela is the last person in the world I want to see. But I'm glad she's in a better place and healing and divorcing the cockroach she married. I delete the email and resolve to push her from my mind. I buzz Andrea. I need coffee. Stat. It's late. The sun has sunk beneath the horizon, and I'm staring at a blank screen in my study. Vows. Drafting them is trickier than I thought. Everything I write will be spoken aloud in front of our nearest and dearest, and I'm trying to find the words to express to Anna how I feel about her, how excited I am to share our life together, and how honored I am that she's chosen me. Damn it. This is hard. My thoughts stray to earlier this evening, when Anna and I met with Gia Mateo. Gia wanted our feedback on a few ideas for the new house. Her vision is bold. I like the approach, but I'm not sure that Anna is entirely on board. When we eventually see Gia's drawn-up plans, we'll be able to judge. Fortunately, the meeting was brief, and she touched me once, that's all. Since then, I've been attempting to write my vows while Anna's been on a call with Alondra Gutierrez. They've each been working tirelessly on this wedding. I just hope it will be everything Anna wants. And frankly, as long as Anna's happy, I'm happy. But most of all, I want to keep her safe. Life without Anna would be unbearable. A flurry of images flash unwelcome through my brain. Anna at gunpoint in her old apartment. Anna, not raw, is seated beside me as Charlie Tango drops to the ground. Anna lying pale and unmoving on a squalid once green rug. Gray, stop. Stop. I need to get a handle on my morbid thoughts. Concentrate, Gray. Focus on where you want to be. With Anna. I want to give her the world. I turn back to my screen, to my vows, and start to type. Anna looks up when I enter the library and gives me a sweet but tired smile. She's been reading a manuscript. Hi.
Hi,
she answers, as I sit down in the armchair beside her and open my arms. She doesn't hesitate. She uncurls her long legs from beneath her and hops over to me, complete with manuscript, and crawls into my lap. Wrapping her in my arms, I kiss the top of her head and breathe in her scent. She is heaven on earth. Anna lets out a soft, contented sigh. She's so good to hold, a balm to my senses. My Anna. We sit in a comfortable, companionable silence. I could never have imagined doing this even 3 months ago. No, 2 months ago. I'm changed beyond recognition. The residue of doubt and fear I felt earlier melts away. She's safe in my arms. And I'm safe with her. Thursday, July 28th, 2011. The senior management meeting has gone well. Everybody is up to speed on what each division is doing and what steps need to be taken next. I'm leaving my company in safe hands. But then, I never doubted that for a moment. However, if I'm honest, it still makes me anxious. This is the first time I've taken a vacation for more than a few days. As everyone leaves the boardroom, they shake my hand and wish me well. I'll be here tomorrow, I remind Marcus.
Christian, you deserve a break, he says. Enjoy your honeymoon.
Thank you. Blowing out a breath, I scrape a hand through my hair. Why the hell am I so apprehensive? Roz sidles up to me when everyone else has left.
The house, it's yours.
It's done?
Signed and sealed.
Great. Thanks for orchestrating. Keys?
They are being biked over.
I'll give them to my brother. He's going to oversee the renovation. Her eyes widen.
Renovating too? You have a great deal on your plate, Christian. I think it's about time you took a vacation.
You know, I'm ready and looking forward to it.
Where will you go?
I took your advice. Europe. She brightens.
Gwen and I are really looking forward to Saturday.
I'll be glad when it's over. I give her a tight smile.
Christian!
She looks taken aback.
You've got to enjoy the day.
I want Anna to enjoy the day. Roz's stance softens immediately.
You have got it bad.
I laugh because she's never made such a personal comment before. Guilty as charged. She grins, her eyes warming. It's a good look on her. I'll certainly enjoy my honeymoon knowing that you're heading this place up and keeping the GEH wheels turning. Her grin broadens.
Don't look so anxious. You'll be in Europe, not on Mars. If I need you, I'll call.
Thanks, Roz.
Now excuse me while I get on with today's business.
I step aside and she struts past me, and in that moment, I'm so grateful she's on my team. Christian, you're like a caged lion. What is it? Flynn asks. He's sitting in his chair, regarding me with his usual professional detachment, while I pace up and down his office, treading a path into the thick pile of his rug. I come to a halt at his question, and glance through the window to see Taylor waiting by the car. He's watching the street from behind mirrored aviators. Nerves? I hazard a guess, and returning to the couch, I slump into it. That's a reasonable reaction to the fact that you're getting married in a couple of days. Is it? Of course it is. It's perfectly natural to be nervous. You are publicly going to declare how much Anastasia means to you. It's all getting real. Yes, it is.
But it's just taken so long to get to this point, and at the last minute we forgot the rings.
I throw my hands up in frustration.
What does that say about us?
That you're both busy people?
He offers, his tone mollifying. But his observation doesn't appease me. Everyone keeps telling me to enjoy myself. My brows knit together. Flynn looks pensive, but remains mute, waiting for me to elucidate.
I just want it done.
Do you?
Are you sure you want to go through with this?
What? I glare at him as if he sprouted an additional head. The wedding? Of course I do.
I thought so.
Then why ask me if I have doubts? I snap.
Christian, I'm trying to unpack the source of your restlessness.
I just want it over. I fire the words at him, exasperated. But Flynn says nothing, and continues to observe me with a calm and measured expression while I wait for him to offer up some insight. When he doesn't, I know he's testing me. Damn.
It's taken so long, I'm not a patient man, I mutter.
It's been a few weeks. It's not that long. I huff out a breath as I struggle to unscramble my feelings. I hope Anna doesn't change her mind.
I think at this stage, Anna is very unlikely to change her mind. Why would she? She loves you.
He holds my gaze. I stare at him, silent, unable to articulate what I want to say. It's frustrating.
You just want to be married?
Flynn prompts.
Yes, then she's mine, and I can protect her, properly.
Ah.
Flynn nods and lets out a soft sigh.
This isn't just nerves, Christian. Tell me.
Showtime, Gray. I swallow, and from the depths of my soul I confess my darkest fear.
Life would be unbearable without her.
My words are almost inaudible. I'm having awful, morbid thoughts. He nods and taps his lip, and I realize this is what he's been waiting for me to say. Do you want to talk about them? He asks. No. If I do, I'll make them real. Why not? I shake my head, feeling exposed, vulnerable, like I'm naked on top of a treeless hill, the wind howling around me. John rubs his chin. Christian, your fears are totally understandable, but they come from the place of an abused, neglected child who was abandoned by the death of his mother. Closing my eyes, I see the crack whore dead on the floor, except she's Anna. Fuck. You're an adult now, a pretty successful one at that. John continues. None of us have any guarantees in life, but it's extremely unlikely that anything's going to happen to Anna, given everything you've put in place. I open my eyes to meet Flynn's, and he still wants more. I fear for her more than I fear for myself, I whisper. His expression softens. I understand, Christian. You love her. But what you have to do is get that fear into perspective and under control. It's irrational, and fundamentally you know this. I let out a long breath. I know. I know. His forehead creases with a brief frown as he glances at his lap. I just want to sound a word of caution. He looks up to make sure he has my full attention. I don't want you to sabotage your happiness, Christian. What? I know you feel you don't deserve it, and it's a relatively new concept for you, but you should nurture and treasure it. Where the hell is he going with this? I do. I try to reassure him. But it makes me anxious. I know. Just be mindful. I nod. You have the tools to overcome your anxiety. Use them. Free your rational mind. Okay. Okay. I'm tiring of this lecture that I've heard before. Let's move on. His lips thin. Are you sure? Yes. He changes the subject. Now, speaking of sabotage, do you have any news on the saboteur? No! The word is an expletive. I wish I had an answer. I'm beginning to wonder if we overreacted. It wouldn't be the first time. My mouth twists into a half smile. Anna said that. She knows you well. She does. Better than anyone, apart from you. You flatter me, Christian. I'm sure she knows you better than I do. We choose what we show to different people. It's part of what makes us human. I think she's seen the worst and the best of you. That's true. She brings out the worst and the best in me. If you put your mind to it, you can concentrate on the best. Don't dwell on the negative, and be mindful. Use all that you've learned here, he asserts. I can try. Don't try. Do. You're more than capable, Christian. He crosses his legs and continues. How are you getting on with your parents? Much better. And I fill him in on my latest interaction with Grace. That all sounds great. And your dad? Nothing to report since his surprise apology. Good. He pauses. Did you get the email I forwarded from Leela? Yes, I don't want to see her. That's probably wise. I'll let her know. Thank you. He smiles. You know, you may not be looking forward to your wedding, but my wife is beyond excited. I laugh. We're bringing the boys. I hope you've nailed everything down. I think Roz, my chief operating officer, is bringing her kids, too. Have you discussed children with Anna? Only generally. We've got years to think about that. We're both young. In fact, I forget how young Anna is sometimes. Yes, and I'm the sulky teen. You're both young, He glances at the clock on the wall behind me.
I think we're done, unless there's anything else you want to talk about. I won't see you in a professional capacity for a while.
I'm good. Thanks for listening. It's my job. Remember, don't dwell on the negative. Focus on the positive. I nod and stand.
And a bit of advice on a personal level,
John says. Happy wife, happy life. Trust me on this one. I chuckle and he grins.
It's good to see you laugh, Christian.
Anna and I stare at each other. We lie in my bed, our bed, nose to nose, each sated, neither of us sleepy.
That was nice,
Anna whispers. I narrow my eyes.
There's that word again.
She grins, and I run my fingers down her cheek. Her smile fades.
What is it?
I ask, and she shifts her gaze downward, away from me.
Anna?
Her eyes find mine and fix me with an intense stare.
We've not been too hasty, have we?
She asks in a rush, her voice breathy and quiet. All my senses are suddenly on high alert.
Where the fuck is she going with this?
No? Why do you think so?
It's just that I'm so happy right now, I don't know if I could be any happier. I don't want to change anything.
I close my eyes, savoring my relief. She lays her hand on my cheek.
Are you happy?
She asks. Opening my eyes, I regard her with all the sincerity I can muster from every fiber of my being. Of course I'm happy. You have no idea how you've changed my life for the better. But I'll be happier once we're married.
You're anxious. I can see it in your eyes.
Her fingers graze my chin. I'm anxious to make you mine.
I am yours,
she murmurs, and her words force a smile. Mine. I continue. And we have to endure 2 days of enforced socializing. She giggles.
Yes, there's that.
I can't wait to take you away.
I can't wait either. Where are we going?
It's a surprise.
I like surprises.
I like you.
I like you too, Christian.
She leans forward and kisses the tip of my nose. Are you sleepy? I ask.
No.
Good. Me neither. I'm not finished with you yet. Saturday, July 30th, 2011. Elliot takes a swig of Macallan. It's just after midnight, and he's sprawled out on my couch, feet up, taking up about as much space as he can. The man has no sense of decorum. Man, this is good scotch.
Should be.
It's expensive. What did she get you? He asks. From my pocket, I remove the turquoise Tiffany box that contains my wedding gift from Anna. Opening it up for the second time, I study the platinum cufflinks, engraved with an elaborate C entwined with an A. She's never bought me anything like this, and I love them. I'll wear them tomorrow when we marry. I hand them to Elliot, and he nods in approval as he examines them.
Nice gift.
Yes, they're perfect.
It's late, bro.
He yawns.
We should turn in. In case it slipped your mind, you're getting hitched in the morning.
We should. My sip of Armagnac warms the back of my mouth before sliding smoothly down my throat. It'll be weird sleeping on my own. Now there's a sentence I never thought I'd utter.
Tonight was cool, he says, ignoring me. I dig Anna's parents. Bob doesn't say much. Come to think of it, Anna's dad doesn't either.
They're both taciturn. I arch an eyebrow. Carla has a type. Elliot laughs.
It's always the quiet ones. Like you, hotshot.
He raises his glass and grins at me.
Fuck off, Elliot. I scowl at him.
Like me? I have no idea what you're alluding to, and I don't even want to think about it. They're my in-laws, for fuck's sake. I don't know. Anna's mom's hot. I could get into older women.
I'm not going there with Elliot.
Dude, what about Kavanaugh?
He gives me a sheepish grin, and I think he's kidding.
Bet you're glad all the parentals hit it off.
He steers us to safer ground.
And Ray is a Mariners fan, so he can't be all bad, but the jury is out on the Sounders. I'm not a fan of soccer.
I nod. It's a relief. Even Raymond Steele loosened up under Grace's warm and tireless attention, and there's no animosity between him and Anna's mother, so that's good news. Ray has retired for the night. It's ironic that he's sleeping in the bedroom I had hoped would be Anna's, if she'd agreed to be my submissive. Perhaps it's best if I keep that information to myself.
And your Mrs. Jones did you proud, Elliot continues.
She did. Gail is a great cook. I think she likes to stretch her culinary legs on occasion.
Elliot downs his drink and smacks his lips together in appreciation.
Uncouth, bro. Uncouth.
That's damn fine whiskey, Hotshot. I'm going to turn in. You?
I have some business to attend to.
Elliot looks at his watch.
Now? It's late. I need to deal with an email that came in before dinner. It won't take long. I'm not sure I can sleep anyway.
It's your funeral. Well, wedding.
He grins and bounds off the couch with his usual spontaneous energy.
Good night. Try and sleep, okay?
He punches me on the arm and takes his leave.
Good night, I call after him.
Don't forget the rings.
He responds with the finger.
In spite of myself, he makes me chuckle. Rising, I slip the Tiffany box back in my pocket. In my study, I open the email that has been preoccupying me since I received it earlier this evening. It's from Welch, and it contains the report from the NTSB on Charlie Tango's accident.
From Welch HC to Christian Gray, CC JB Taylor, July 29th, 2011, 1857. NTSB report. Mr. Gray, attached is the detailed report from the National Transportation Safety Board. They have been more than thorough and confirm sabotage. The fuel lines were cut, allowing aviation kerosene to leak into the engines. The report has been forwarded to the FBI and will be used to continue the criminal investigation. Fortunately, the NTSB has kept them updated, and the FBI dusted for prints last week as part of their investigation. They are in the process of eliminating the engineers and ground staff from their inquiries, but at present they're no nearer to finding a suspect. Tomorrow I'd like to move the Gulfstream to SeaTac so you'll depart from there and not Boeing Field. I'll arrange for you to be dropped off airside. I've added 4 additional security officers to your wedding detail. Resumes are attached. Taylor has approved them. 2 of them have been dispatched to the wedding venue to keep watch overnight. Apologies for this arriving on the eve of your nuptials. Leave this with us and try to enjoy your big day. Welch.
Fuck. Our instincts were right. But who wants to kill me? Who?
I type a quick response to Welch.
Agreed, and thanks.
I toss back the remains of my Armagnac and decide to read the full report in bed. I'm on my own because Anna left with my parents to stay at their place tonight.
To hell with these stupid traditions. She should be here, with me. I miss her.
At least Sawyer went with her. He'll watch over her. As I gather up the pages of the NTSB report from my printer, my mood grows bleaker. I am done with this shit. The report is extensive and rather dull, but in spite of my drooping eyelids, I manage to finish it. The next steps are to hand Charlie Tango over to the FBI, and once they've finished with her, they'll return her to Eurocopter for a full assessment. I'm hopeful she can be repaired, and GEH won't have to deal with any insurance adjusters. I switch off my side light and stare up at the ceiling. Why is this happening the night before my wedding? I'm shrouded in darkness and conscious of an empty feeling creeping into my chest. I'm now able to recognize it as loneliness. My heart is missing a piece, as Anna is not beside me. Though strictly speaking, I'm not alone. My future father-in-law is probably asleep above me. Elliot is in the spare bedroom next door, and the staff quarters are almost at capacity. But Anastasia Steele is conspicuous by her absence. I wish she were here. I'd wrap her in my arms and lose myself in her. I'm tempted to text her, but it might wake her, and she needs her sleep. Fuck it. Without her, I'm lost, and someone out there wants me dead, and we don't know who. Damn. Push it from your mind, Gray. I close my eyes. Breathe, Gray. Breathe. I start counting sheep. We are soaring. Anna is in front of the cockpit, her hands stretched out to the canopy, squealing with joy and wonder. My heart is full. This is happiness. This is love. This is what it feels like. We're on top of the world, our life stretched in a colorful patchwork of greens and browns beneath us. I bank, and suddenly I'm in a tailspin. Anna is screaming, screaming. We're in Charlie Tango and we're losing height. I smell the fire. I'm fighting the controls to keep my helicopter upright. I need to find a place to land. All I hear is the roar of the engines and Anna screaming. We're going down. Fuck. Spinning. Down. 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 Shit. I'm going to hit the ground. No. No. Anna is lying on a sticky green rug. I'm shaking her. She won't wake up. Anna. Anna. Anna! There's a crash. And he fills the doorway. There you are, you little shit. No. No. Anna. 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 I'm jerked awake, a fine film of sweat bathing my chest and stomach in the first blink of dawn. It's too early. I rub my face, bringing my breathing and terror under control, then close my eyes and turn over. Reaching out, I grab Anna's pillow and tug it toward me. I immerse myself in her scent. Oh. Grandpa Theodore hands me an apple. It's bright red and sweet. There's a light breeze on my face. It's cooling in the sunshine. We stand together in the orchard. He holds my hand. His palm is rough with calluses. Mom and Dad and Elliot are coming. They have a picnic basket. Dad lays out the blanket, and Anna sits down on the blanket. Anna, she's here. With me, with us. She laughs. And I laugh. Anna caresses my face.
Here,
she says. And she hands me baby Mia. Mia. And suddenly I'm six again.
Mia,
I whisper. Mom looks at me.
What did you say? Mia. Yes, yes, darling boy, you have your words. Mia. Her name is Mia.
And Mommy starts to cry happy tears. I open my eyes, startled by an image from my dream that I can't quite grasp. What was I dreaming about? The sun is higher in the sky, announcing that it's a more acceptable time to rise. I shake my head to rouse myself, and then I remember. Today, I make Anna mine. Today at 12 p.m., yes. And then I get to spend 3 weeks with her in Europe. I can't wait to show Anna all the sights. As I lie in bed feeling excited about what I have planned, I have an idea. I'm going to pack a few toys from the playroom to add to the fun. Yes. I bound out of bed, grab a t-shirt, and head toward the kitchen. From the corridor I hear voices. Ray is sitting at the kitchen counter, tucking into bacon, eggs, hash browns, and sausages. He's chatting with Mrs. Jones. Unlike me, he's dressed in his wedding shirt and tuxedo pants.
Good morning. I greet him.
Good morning, Christian. How are you feeling?
Good.
Morning, Mr. Gray.
Gail gushes.
Coffee?
Please.
It's a mighty fine place you have here,
Ray says, motioning to the ceiling with his knife.
Thank you. Anna tells me you've bought a house.
Yes, it's up the coast.
Ray nods.
She says you have a place in Aspen in New York, too.
Yes. You know, property. It's about diversifying my portfolio.
He nods, but gives nothing away.
A lot of places for one person to mind.
Well, after today, there'll be two of us minding them. His eyebrows rise high into his forehead, and a slow smile that is either admiration or incredulity spreads across his face. I hope it's admiration.
I guess you're right,
he says. I want to move the conversation off this topic. Did you sleep well?
I did. That room is probably one of the fanciest I've ever stayed in, and that is some view.
I'm glad you were comfortable.
Here you are, Mr. Gray.
Mrs. Jones places a black coffee on the counter in front of me. Thank you, Gail.
What would you like for breakfast?
What Ray is having.
She smiles.
Coming right up, sir.
I slide onto the stool beside Ray and ask him if he's been fishing recently. His eyes light up. Even I have to admit that Elliot looks good in a tux. We're in the back of the Q7 and nearing our parents' place in Bellevue.
How are you feeling?
He asks. I wish people would stop asking me that.
You? Nervous? You're the coolest dude I know. What gives?
Is it because you're saddling yourself to the same woman for the rest of your life? I'd be nervous too. I roll my eyes. Your promiscuity knows no bounds, Elliot. One of these days, someone is going to turn your world upside down. I didn't know it would happen to me, and yet here we are. His eyes cloud, and he looks out of the window as we pull up to our parents' house. There are a number of cars queuing for the valet service, and guests in their wedding finery are following the pale pink carpet to the rear of the house. As Taylor steers us into the driveway, two guys in dark suits with discreet earpieces and regulation aviators step forward and open our doors. They're the additional security.
Ready?
Asks Elliot with a quick, reassuring glance at me.
If you want to back out, there's still time.
Fuck off.
He grins and climbs out of the car. I take a deep breath. This is it. Showtime, Gray. My phone buzzes and I glance at it. Fuck. My scalp tingles. It's a text from Elena.
You're making a big mistake. I know you, but I'll be here for you when your life falls apart, and it will. I'll be here because, in spite of what I said, I love you. I'll always love you.
What the everlasting fuck is this?
Christian!
Elliot distracts me.
Are you coming?
He's waiting.
Yes,
I snap. I quickly delete the text and climb out of the car.
Fuck her.
You okay?
Elliot frowns when I join him.
Yes, let's do this.
I storm ahead, trying to bring my burst of anger under control. How dare Elena try to derail me on my wedding day? I ignore the young woman who's standing on the path, all smiles. She's carrying a clipboard, but I charge past her, leaving Elliot to check in with her as I head through the front door. Grace is in the hall.
Darling, you're here.
Mother.
You look so handsome, Christian.
She puts her arms around me, gives me a swift, restrained hug, and inclines her head toward me, offering a cheek.
Mom,
I whisper, and she steps back, concern flashing in her eyes.
Are you okay?
I nod, not trusting myself to speak.
Anna is upstairs. You can't see her until the wedding. She slept in your room last night. Come with me.
She takes my hand and leads me down the hallway into the den.
Is it nerves, darling? I'd hug you properly, but I don't want to get makeup on your suit.
Grace says.
The esthetician put it on with a trowel. It will take months to get it off.
I laugh, and I'm so grateful that it's Grace I got to see first.
I'm okay, Mom.
She clasps both of my hands.
Are you sure?
Yes. My anger has evaporated, beaten back by the woman I call Mom, and I resolve that, today of all days, I will not think about Mrs. Lincoln.
I'm so excited for you, darling,
Grace adds, beaming up at me. You look good, Mom, makeup and all.
Thank you, dear. Oh, the donations to Coping Together have been unprecedented. I can't thank you enough. It's so generous of you.
I chuckle. That was Anna's idea, not mine.
Oh, that's lovely.
She's trying to hide her surprise. I told you, she's not acquisitive.
Of course she isn't. It's a wonderful gesture on both your parts. Are you sure you're okay?
Yes, I got an aggravating text from an old business associate. Grace narrows her eyes, and I think I may have said too much, but she chooses to ignore my explanation and checks her watch.
Kickoff is in 15 minutes. I have your boutonniere here. Now, do you want to wait here or go out to the pavilion?
I think Elliot and I should go take our seats and wait. Mom pins the white rose to my lapel and steps back to admire her handiwork.
Oh, darling.
She stops, placing her fingers over her lips, and I think she's going to cry. Shit, Mom. My throat tightens, but Elliot steps into the room, saving us both.
What am I, chopped liver?
He chastises Grace with a wicked gleam in his eye.
Oh, darling, you look so handsome, too.
She recovers and cups his face and pinches his cheeks, and I feel a momentary stab of envy that they have such a touchy-feely relationship. Mom, you look like a queen. My brother, charming as ever, plants a kiss on her forehead. She laughs, a girlish, sweet laugh, and she pats her hair.
You boys,
she admonishes us.
You'd better get out there. The ushers will show you where to go, but first let me pin on your boutonniere, Elliot.
As we head to the pavilion, Taylor intercepts me.
Sir, I've picked up Miss Steele's suitcase, and everything else has been sent on to SeaTac.
Excellent. Thanks, Taylor. His lips twitch into a smile.
Good luck, sir.
I nod my thanks and continue with Elliot toward the barn-like tent. A string quartet is playing Halo by Beyoncé while I wait for Miss Anastasia Steele. My folks have gone all out. The pavilion looks opulent. Elliot and I are seated at the front of several rows of gold chairs, which are filling up fast. I stare at the scene in front of me, noting all the details, hoping it will distract me from my nerves. A pale pink carpet leads to an impressive, arched, flowery bower pitched at the water's edge. It's made of white and pink roses, intertwined with ivy and pale pink peonies that remind me of Anna's blushing cheeks. Reverend Michael Walsh, my mother's friend and her hospital's chaplain, will officiate. He's standing in his designated place, patiently waiting, like us. His dark eyes twinkle at Elliot and me. Behind the floral arch, the sun skips across the shining waters of Maidenbower Bay. It's a beautiful day to get married. One of the official photographers is stationed near Walsh, and her lens is directed at me. I look away and turn to Elliot. You've got the rings? I ask, probably for the 10th time.
Yes,
he hisses.
Dude, just checking.
I turn and survey our guests as they arrive, nodding and waving to those I know. Bastille and his wife are here. Flynn arrives with his wife, Rian, each holding one of their small boys firmly by the hand. Taylor and Gail are seated together. The photographer Jose Rodriguez and his father are here. Roz arrives with her partner Gwen, and they usher their little girls into their seats. Eamon Cavanaugh, his wife Britt, and Ethan are here. Mia will be pleased. Max salutes me. He's sitting with a young blonde woman I've not seen before. Grandma and Grandpa Trevelyan are shown to their seats near us. Grandma waves enthusiastically at both Elliot and me. Alondra Gutierrez is in the background, directing her small team of people. There are a number of guests that I don't recognize, either friends of my folks or of Anna's parents. My mother and father and Carla and Bob make their way to the front of the gathering to take their seats. My dad breaks rank and dashes toward us. He's brimming with pride, and Elliot and I both stand to greet him. Dad. I hold my hand out to shake his, but he takes it and pulls me into a bear-like hug.
Good luck, son, he enthuses. I'm so proud of you.
Thanks, Dad.
I squeeze the words past the sudden, tangled knot of emotion that's lodged in my throat.
Elliot.
Carrick hugs him, too. The general buzz of the congregation changes to an expectant hush. Dad scuttles back to his seat behind us as the string quartet breaks into chasing cars. Of course, Snow Patrol, one of Anna's favorite bands. She loves this song. Mia is walking down the center aisle, dressed in a pale pink explosion of tulle. Behind her, Kate Kavanaugh looks sleek and elegant in a pale pink silk gown. Anna. My mouth dries. She's stunning. She's in a fitted white lace dress, her shoulders bare but for a gossamer thin veil. Her hair is pinned in an updo with a few tendrils framing her beautiful face. Her bridal bouquet is intricate, made of pink and white roses woven together. Ray walks by her side, his hand covering hers as she grips his arm, and it's obvious he's holding back his tears. Oh, shit. The knot tightens in my throat. Anna's eyes meet mine, and beneath her veil, her face lights up like a summer's day, her smile electrifying. Oh, baby. They walk up beside us, and Anna passes her bouquet to Kate, who stands with Mia. Ray raises Anna's veil and kisses her cheek.
I love you, Annie,
I hear him say, his voice hoarse, and turning to me, he gives me Anna's hand. Our eyes meet, his glistening, and I have to look away because his expression may be my undoing.
Hi,
I say to my bride, because that's all I'm capable of right now.
Hi,
she replies and squeezes my hand.
You look lovely.
So do you.
She grins, and all my nerves melt away, as does the music. And it's just Anna and me and Reverend Michael. He clears his throat, commanding everybody's attention, and the wedding begins.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to witness the joining in matrimony of Christian Trevelyan Gray and Anastasia Rose Steele.
The good Reverend smiles benevolently down at both of us, and I tighten my hold on Anna's hand. He asks the congregation if anyone knows of any impediment to our marriage. Elena's text flits through my mind, and I'm annoyed with myself that I let it. Fortunately, Anna distracts me by glancing back at the crowd. When no one says anything, a collective sigh of relief flutters through the gathering, followed by muffled chuckles and titters. Anna peeks up at me, her eyes sparkling in amusement.
Phew, I mouth.
Anna stifles her smile. Reverend Michael asks us each in turn to declare that there's no legal reason why we can't be joined in marriage. As he addresses us about the seriousness of our commitment to each other, the burning sensation returns to my throat. Anna watches him, absorbed, and I notice she's wearing elegant drop pearl earrings I've not seen before. I wonder if they are a present from her folks.
And now I invite both of you to offer your vows to each other.
He looks encouragingly at me.
Christian?
I take a deep breath, and gazing at the love of my life, I recite my vows from memory, my words ringing out over the throng.
I, Christian Trevelyan Gray, do take thee, Anastasia Rose Steele, to be my lawfully wedded wife.
I solemnly vow that I will safeguard and hold dear and deep in my heart our union and you. I promise to love you faithfully, forsaking all others, through the good times and the bad, in sickness and in health, regardless of where life takes us. I will protect you, trust you, and respect you. Tears glimmer in Anna's eyes, and the tip of her nose turns a fetching pink. I will share your joys and sorrows and comfort you in times of need. I promise to cherish you and uphold your hopes and dreams and keep you safe at my side. All that is mine is now yours. I give you my hand, my heart, and my love. From this moment on, for as long as we both shall live. Anna wipes a tear from her eye, and I take a deep breath, relieved that I've remembered the words. Anna? The good reverend prompts her. From beneath her sleeve, she takes a small slip of pink paper and reads.
I, Anastasia Rose Steele, do take thee, Christian Trevelyan Gray, to be my lawfully wedded husband. I give you my solemn vow to be your faithful partner, in sickness and in health, to stand by your side in good times and in bad, to share your joy as well as your sorrow.
She gazes up at me and continues her vows without reading, and I stop breathing.
I promise to love you unconditionally, to support you in your goals and dreams, to honor and respect you, to laugh with you and cry with you, to share my hopes and dreams with you, and bring you solace in times of need, and to cherish you for as long as we both shall live.
She blinks back her tears, and I fight mine. You two will now exchange rings as a symbol of your abiding love for each other. A ring is a constant circle. It is unbroken and everlasting, a symbol of perpetual unity. So too will be your commitment to each other and to this marriage, from this day forth, until death do you part. Christian, place the ring on Anastasia's finger. Elliot hands me Anna's ring, and I position it at the tip of Anna's left ring finger. Repeat after me, Reverend Michael says. Anastasia, I give you this ring as a sign of our enduring faith in each other, our unity, and our everlasting love. I repeat the words loud and clear, and slip the ring fully onto Anna's finger. Anastasia, place the ring on Christian's finger, Reverend Michael says. Elliot flashes a grin at Anna and passes her my ring. Repeat after me, the Reverend continues. Christian, I give you this ring as a sign of our enduring faith in each other, our unity, and our everlasting love. Anna's words sound out sweetly for the rest of the congregation to hear, and she slips the ring onto my finger. Reverend Michael clasps both of our hands in his and says in a booming voice to our audience, Love is the reason we are here. Marriage is founded on love. These two young people have pledged their everlasting love to each other. We honor them and wish them strength, courage, and trust to grow together, to learn from each other, and to remain true to each other on the path that life takes them. Christian and Anastasia, you two have agreed to be married and to live together in matrimony. You have declared your love for each other and promised to uphold that love with your vows. With the power vested in me by the state of Washington, I now declare you husband and wife. He releases our hands, and Anna beams up at me. Wife, mine. My heart soars. You may kiss the bride, Reverend Michael says with a huge grin. Finally, you're mine, I whisper, and pull her into my arms, flush against me, and plant a soft kiss on her lips. There are tiny buttons at the back of her dress, and I fantasize about slowly undoing them. I ignore the cheers and applause from our guests as my body comes alive. You look beautiful, Anna. I caress her face. Don't let anyone take that dress off but me. Understand? I gaze down at her, trying to convey a sensual promise. She nods, her eyes darkening with desire. Oh, Anna.
I want to pick her up and carry her to my boyhood room and consummate our marriage. Now. But I'm sure I won't get away with that. Get a grip, Gray. Ready to party, Mrs. Gray? I smile at my wife.
Ready as I'll ever be.
I bask in the warmth of her smile. Taking her hand, I extend the other to Reverend Michael.
Thank you, Reverend. That was a lovely ceremony, and it was brief.
I had my instructions, he says, and shakes our hands in turn.
Congratulations, both of you.
I have to release Anna as Kate drags her into a hug, and Elliot wraps his arms around me.
Man, you did it! Congratulations!
Christian!
Mia hollers and barrels into my arms.
I love Anna. I love you.
She gushes and crushes me.
Mia, steady. I need my ribs intact.
So begins an endless round of congratulations, kisses, and hugs. I gird my loins to tolerate all the unnecessary touching I'm about to endure. It helps that I'm elated. When I turn to my mother, she's sobbing. I give her a brief hug, mindful of her makeup, while Carrick slaps me on the back. Carla and Bob are next. Ray Steele shakes my hand, squeezing harder and harder.
Congratulations, Christian. You should know, if you hurt her, I'll kill you.
I'd expect no less, Ray.
I'm glad we understand each other.
He grins and releases my now throbbing hand and claps me on the back. I flex my fingers and remind myself that Raymond Steele is ex-army. Sipping a coupe of vintage Grand Anne Rosé, I watch my beautiful wife as she makes her way toward me. We've just completed what feels like a major photo shoot with the wedding photographers, and now I'm standing near our table in the hope of having a bite to eat. Getting married has given me an appetite. Anna stops every so often to talk to our guests, welcoming them and graciously receiving their good wishes. Her light shines so bright, her smile bringing everyone she greets to life. She's an extraordinary person, a stunning woman, and she's mine. When she finally reaches me, I take her hand and pull it to my lips.
Hi, I whisper. I've missed you.
Hi, I've missed you too.
You've dispensed with your veil. It was lovely.
It was, but people kept treading on it.
I cringe. That must have been annoying.
It was.
My father takes the microphone.
Good afternoon, all, he says. Welcome to our home here in Bellevue, and to Christian and Anna's wedding. If you don't know me, I am very proud to say I am Christian's dad, Carrick. I'm hoping to speak to all of you at some point during the afternoon or evening. In the meantime, you should all have a glass of the good stuff, and I'd like us all to raise our glasses to Christian and his beautiful wife, Anna. Congratulations, you two. Welcome to the family, Anna. And both of you, be kind to each other. To Christian and Anna.
My father gives me a warm, tender smile, which I feel all the way to my toes. I raise my glass to him, as everyone raises their glasses, and the words Christian and Anna hover around us all.
Please make your way to your table. We'll be starting lunch shortly, Dad continues.
I pull out Anna's chair. She sits, and I take the seat beside her. From here, we have the best view of the entire pavilion. I'm thankful to be seated at last. I'm ravenous. The table looks lovely, covered in white linen and floral arrangements with white and pink roses. Our parents join us, with Elliot and Kate and Mia and Bob. Anna and my mom have opted for a buffet, but as the bridal party, we're served our appetizers while our guests find their seats. There's fresh sourdough with some herby-looking butter, and a delicious cheese souffle with a delicate garden salad. My wife and I tuck in. Elliot is going to make a speech. He's had several glasses of champagne, so this could go either way.
We've finished our entree of king salmon en croûte, and I take a gulp of Boulanger and brace myself. Elliot winks at me and rises from the table. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. I've drawn the short straw. I'm honored to be Christian's best man and his brother, and to be asked to make a speech. But forgive me, public speaking is not my thing. Growing up with Christian Grey was not my thing either. He was a nightmare of a brother, just ask my folks.
Fuck, Elliot?
But this gets a laugh. Anna squeezes my hand. This man can beat the shit out of me, and did, frequently. And any of you who have ever kickboxed with him will know, don't mess with him. He's badass. He's a solitary guy. When he was younger, he'd rather have his head stuck in a book than be out tearing up the town with the likes of me. You've all heard how he found school challenging, so I'll gloss over that. But somehow, by some fluke, and not because he's smart or anything, he managed to get some sort of education and even talked his way into Harvard. But it turned out Harvard wasn't for him either. He wanted to throw himself into the world of commerce and high finance, so he did. He's doing kind of okay with that. Elliot shrugs, apparently unimpressed, and again the audience laughs.